Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, April 22nd, 2006. My name's Marcia Mary Baker, and today I'm speaking to you from what Lyndon LaRouche has called recently, and before that even, ground zero for this is Leesburg, Loudoun County in Virginia, 40 miles from Washington, D.C., and by ground zero for the real estate home mortgage bubble of the ages, which is now in the process of bursting. And that's going to be our topic today in the form of a tremendous background briefing that can be given by two people here I'll introduce on the show right now and then fill you in a bit more on what Mr. LaRouche himself is doing. But we welcome Lonnie Wolf. Hi.
Hi.
And Richard Freeman.
Hello.
And many of you participating in this show today know them. Lonnie has been an editor and close associate of Mr. LaRouche for decades. Same with Richard Freeman, who's on the EIR economics team. And Lonnie, as you know, is a big economics historian as well as Richard. And we are living history right now as to the implications of what you will hear in a minute is taking place right here in Loudoun County, Virginia, the world-famous Loudoun County. We also have with us today from the East Coast two LaRouche Youth Movement leaders I'd like to welcome now, and then, as I say a bit more. From the New England LaRouche Youth Movement in Boston, welcome Matthew Ogden.
Hello.
Okay.
Ex-Loudoun resident.
And Lonnie has provided the important credentials here. Matthew survived growing up in Loudoun County. Would you call it that, Matt?
Survived.
And we have from the political ground zero of the United States right now in Washington, D.C., from the LaRouche Youth Movement office there. Welcome, Paul Marino.
Yes, hi, Marcia. How you doing?
Good. So what we've got, I've already indicated what Lonnie Wolf, Richard Freeman are going to give this in-depth briefing on, and our LaRouche Youth Movement leaders discuss and discuss our organizing. What we've got is a tremendous situation where the financial system, built on waves over the decades of different kinds of speculation, is blowing apart. And at the same time, what this means is, oh, by the way, I don't have to go into it now. It might come up in a few minutes during the show. Look at how much gasoline has been going up by the hour. Look at what's happening if you don't pay close attention to it, but you could look at what's happening in metals, in gold and silver and copper. You could look, we can get into that. But the thing is blowing apart. And at the same time, the biggest problem is posed by people not understanding how it got this way, how lurking in the bushes there are the bad guys who want to take advantage of it all. Mr. LaRouche has issued a new document that will be the cover story of the Executive Intelligence Review on Felix the Fascist, referring to Felix Rohatyn in the Democratic Party and at large, who is a banker's boy internationally, has been so decades, who, it speaks for itself, Felix the Fascist, what kind of policies he's proposing. But what we have is maybe the most historic organizing opportunity ever in history. Mr. LaRouche, about 2 hours ago, called for the greatest ass-kicking effort we've ever mounted to get people to face reality and to do what's necessary on behalf of nations and citizens and the general welfare, not on behalf of the financial networks who caused it all and want to take advantage of it all. So in that regard, I'll just say point out the kind of active organizing that the LaRouche Youth Movement is leading and other forces in the country are active in. And that is, we've had in April what you could call a month of action on the west coast of the United States, led by the LaRouche Youth Movement, who are going to go to the national or to the statewide Democratic Party conference in Sacramento later this week. And of course, that's the biggest, most populous state, California, in the whole United States. It's not some also-ran location. And so this weekend, the entire western states LaRouche Youth Movement, from Texas up through Washington State, is gathered somewhere in the vicinity of Los Angeles, I believe, and that's the gathering that Mr. LaRouche briefed earlier today on what our tasks are right now. At the same time, elsewhere in the Midwest and in the East Coast, we have a week of action planned here in Washington. I'll ask Paul to say about something about that in a minute. But it coincides with the fact now that Congress is coming back from, I hope they haven't spent 10 days rolling Easter eggs somewhere, but they're coming back and reconvening 2 days from now. And Paul Marino for the LaRouche Youth Movement will say what's in store for trying to force the issue with Congress to face reality. And then next Saturday, people should know that in Lansing, Michigan, there is going to be a major Midwestern-based or national rally hosted by many in the United Auto Workers, but also in the trade union movement generally, in Lansing, about not just the issue of auto plants in particular, but the entire, what they call the American dream, meaning normal things like opportunity to work, to have decent housing, to have decent health care. And that's considered a mass event, and that'll be on the 29th. And we hope to have a firsthand report from that event here on the LaRouche Show. You know, we're weekly from 3 to 4 in the afternoon Eastern Time on the Internet. And we also may very well have a firsthand report from Sacramento, California, from Harley Schlanger, from the Democratic Party convention out there in California. So rather than saying more, I could say more of what Mr. LaRouche, he's been a busy man. He's been writing, he's been commissioning studies. But I think the best way to proceed for the next hour, and I invite emails from people, I think you all know, or you would, that's how you're listening now, so you know how to send an email. Anytime for our guests. And I also, but as I say, what I'd like to do is just turn to Lonnie Wolfe for a minute and say in advance, we're probably going to have some of the history of this bubble. We're going to have some of the how to compare it to history in general, like what happened in Germany in 1923. We're going to have a lot of things. But Lonnie, what's this bubble bursting look like in general? What's its parameters here in Loudoun County? Why did Lynn commission you, for example, last summer? I think it was in July. And people can call in and get a copy of it. Lonnie did a study then of Ground Zero here in Loudoun County for this crazy real estate bubble. It's in an EIR issue in July 2005. What's the deal?
And there's going to be another one this week. But what Lynn was looking at is, he said, look, we have here a classic bubble in the sense that to give people a sense of what we're talking about, you have to have a little bit of a vision of Loudoun County. Matt has a very good idea. Some of the people from Washington may have a good idea because they're close here and they've been out here. But Loudoun County has no economy, no real economy. It had a real economy. It had was once a very viable agro-light industry-based economy on the suburbs of Washington, supplied much of the food for the Baltimore Washington metropolitan area. In other words, the land in this county was put to productive use. It was, and the county had a number of small to medium-sized towns, typical of the towns that you might find in the Midwest that serviced this economy. People lived here. They had stable lives. They had a sense of community. They had a railroad that interconnected the area with other agriculture and industrial areas and with Washington, D.C. And then things started to change. And they started to change, typical with the changes that started taking place in the 1960s. I think the most telling thing that you can understand, to understand the insanity of the change, is that the railroad was removed for a bicycle path. Now, the railroad was still functioning. It wasn't making money, but railroads don't have to make money. They serve a purpose. And the railroad was removed to for a higher environmental purpose, to provide people with a bicycle and walking path. And Loudoun and the Northern Virginia area have no rail link to its major metropolitan area, Washington, D.C. Industry was discouraged starting in the late 1970s and especially into the early 1980s, so that you were not going to have an industrial area. The only thing you had out developing out here was Dulles International Airport, which was the international airport that serviced Washington, D.C., a national security-based area. Instead, what was decided to be done to this county was a whole section of the county was to be kept essentially undeveloped, in which this was going to be a national security zone, in which prominent individuals like Madeleine Albright, like George Shultz for a while, that's something I found out recently, and others lived here, protected by networks of intelligence agents, ex-Army personnel, and others. And that was basically what it looked like through the through the early part of the 1980s. Then, in the middle of the 1980s, a person who had some interest, we in the LaRouche movement had some interest in, only because he became a very distinct enemy of ours, a former chairman of the Board of Supervisors by the name of Frank Raflo, was approached by some individuals at Xerox Realty, which is a branch of the Xerox Corporation, and told that Xerox had intended to develop Loudoun County into the future seat of 500 Fortune 500 corporations. Now, the very fact that he was saying 500 Fortune 500 corporations should have caused Mr. Raflo, who is a Phi Beta Kappa, to have some alarm about this. But what he did is, what happened instead is he believed this nonsense, and his head was pumped up, and many people in Loudoun County's head were pumped up about a large influx of information-based, financial-based companies moving in with their headquarters units into an area of Loudoun County. This set off an enormous real estate boom. It was the first jolt in this real estate, in this speculative real estate. All of a sudden, land values in the county doubled almost overnight. This is in 1985 and 86. And that sort of abated a little bit in the period of after the 1987 stock market crash. But intersecting that stock market crash, as Richie will explain, were decisions that were made outside of Loudoun County by central bankers to create large speculative bubbles by diverting funds from the productive economy essentially into speculation, with real estate being one of the principal modes of doing this, creating huge bubbles in mortgage-based instruments, securities, and later derivatives of those securities, such as securitized mortgage bundles and so forth. And that flow of money found its way in a large way into Loudoun County. And it started flowing in great floods starting in the early 1990s. And things started moving upward. Values of homes moved upward. Assessments started moving upward. But this was only the beginning. Starting in 1999, especially in 1999, after the so-called Asia crisis of 1998, a decision was made to kick this up even a further gear, into a gear that nobody, a hyper gear, if you want to call it that. In other words, sort of like one of these hyper drives. They took something that was already a bubble, and they decided to hyperinflate it. And from the period of 1999 through to 2005, in this area in which a number of bubbles had already been popped, for example, the IT bubble, in which one of the headquarters, one of the noted scam places of the IT industry, WorldCom, was headquartered in Loudoun County. So when you hear about WorldCom, you hear it's associated with Loudoun County. America Online, Time Warner, America Online moved to its headquarters to Loudoun County. But when the IT bubble popped, they decided to push what amounted to a housing bubble off, which had no relationship even to employment in the IT sector, no relationship to almost anything, a feeding frenzy, right? And from 1999 to 2005, property values, especially in homes, increased on an average of 20 to 30% and sometimes more per year. And in overall values, land assessment values increased by over 150 to 200%. Now, this created an environment in here which completely destroyed any sense of community. Into this vortex of this bubble were sucked the average homeowner. And this is one of the reasons that Lynn was so interested in this, because you can get a very good understanding of the psychology of a bubble mentality. Formerly, people bought their homes because they lived in them. That seems to make sense, right? You buy a home because you live in it. And you bought it because it had certain attributes that you wanted because you were going to live there for a period of years. For example, when my parents bought their home, we lived in our home for 50 years before they finally sold it. In this county, it was noted for the fact that people lived in homes forever. And even when we moved here, even in the period of the bubble, people were living in their homes for 7 to 10 years on average in the first stages of this bubble. By the time this bubble mentality took off, people were no longer buying their homes to live in. They were no longer making sane or rational judgments about this. What they were doing was they were buying their homes with the prospect of an appreciation in the value of their home by almost doing nothing, and then thinking that they were going to sell their home and realize the profit. Something was done to aid that in the late 1990s, at the end of the Clinton administration, when this bubble took off. They decided to change the tax rules to encourage people to sell their homes and to trade homes as if you were trading stocks or something to try and make speculative value. They said that the capital gain on your individual home would be tax-free up to $500,000, and that you could sell your home every 2 years and realize such a gain. This sucked enormous numbers of people into this belief that home values, appreciated home values, were real, and that was in fact their savings, that was in fact their prospect for their future, and this fed the bubble even more. So at this particular point, the bubble through 2005, this bubble had grown to an enormous proportion. Land values, as I said, had more than doubled, in some cases trebled. And what Lynn was looking at when he ordered us, why he said this is ground zero, is because Loudoun County developed the reputation within this speculative mentality overall in the nation as sort of the poster child for this real estate boom. So he said, we have to expose this for what it is, a scam, a fraud, and a delusion, because this delusion is central to the entire mentality of the American population right now, which somehow, although they see a collapse in the physical economy, thinks that their well-being is improving.
Well, that gave an idea of the history and dimensions. Before we get into more of the mechanisms and so forth, which I know you and Richard know about, Matt, you came up, as they say, went to school, survived this whole process of people figuring their buying and selling their home should be their home inflation is an industry.
Right.
What do you want to throw anything in here, Matt?
Well, I remember. I remember when I first went to elementary school out in northern Loudoun in Luckett's. I had an elementary school that had somewhere between 70 and 80 kids in it. It was a very small town kind of elementary school. And then moving out to western Loudoun, I was just surrounded by cow fields everywhere and hay fields everywhere. And then all of a sudden, I remember across the street from my house, people putting up stakes and putting up orange ribbons. And was wondering what those things were, and I found out that they were stakes for a future housing development. And they would come and they'd put them up, and then they wouldn't develop them. They would just kind of put them up, and then sometimes the company would go bankrupt even before they would be able to sell the houses. But I remember running across the street and pulling up some of these stakes and thinking that I could stop the housing, the subdivisions from coming out into western Loudoun. But these things started growing like mushrooms, and I remember when I left home back in 2000 or 2001, homes were being sold for, I think, $150,000 or $200,000. I just looked, coming back to visit, I remember looking at some of these same subdivisions, which have grown since then out in Round Hill and Purcellville, and the same houses, the same crappy-looking houses, are going for somewhere like $750,000 or $800,000. And you get on the website of this, Lonnie probably knows this woman. what's her name, Sherry Wilson.
Sherry Wilson.
She's the leading real estate seller for something like 15 years.
Her slogan is, Sherry sells Loudoun. And I remember, and I got on her website just last week. She has a commercial up there with her smiling and selling people's houses. And she's got homes listed there for over $1 million. Some are $3 million in Western Loudoun.
So let me put a pitch right in here to be specific. I recommend people look on www.larouchepub.com for these articles. One already posted by Mr. LaRouche, the EIR issue, that's called The Great Leesburg Bust of 2006. Bankers Association warns of bust. I mean, he's referring to the fact that, and we're going to get into this now, the big, you know, the bust side of this big boom, but also the upcoming article that the team has done and Lonnie wrote up called, As LaRouche Warned, Loudoun County Real Estate Bubble is Ready to Implode. So, one of the things that Matt Ogden was just saying, when these, the breathtaking up valuation of the housing, if you own a house here, Lonnie and Richard figure that it went up by $400 a day in paper valuation in the last 6 years, if I read the article right. So let me just turn to Richard on the bus side, unless you want to say more. We can get into the historical parallels in a minute. But so this isn't holding up. Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I just want to say two things. First, I mean, again, think of the reason you have a home. It's to raise a family. It's a place to not just sleep, but it's actually a social place. You nurture children, you raise them, you have discussions at the dinner table, and so forth. The value of the home has a certain value, has to what raising the family, and also a value in terms of the physical construction costs that you put into it, lumber and so forth, glass. There's been a complete divorce, as Lonnie was making the point, since at least 1995, but then on a more accelerated basis since 2000, in any real use or need for a home and what the prices are. The prices are completely divorced, and they're moving in a relationship which because this became a principal feature of where people want to put the money. The speculators, Greenspan in particular, facilitated this because after the March of 2000 clash of the stock markets and the IT boom, the information technology, interest rates were lowered so that within 18 months it was down to 1% and held there for a number of years with the explicit purpose of money being lent out for both the home boom and for what's called cash out refinancing. And I just wanted to reference that because if you look right now, the collapse of the housing boom bubble and the commodities bubble, which Mr. LaRouche has been referencing, which is growing at an incredible rate. I know some of our listeners know this, but I just wanted to mention this to give them one sense. 2005 as a whole, the futures prices of a basket of 14 primary commodities inflated by 27.3%. In the first quarter of 2006, now we're just taking the first quarter, it increased by 22.2%, which if you annualize it, you see you get about a 90% rate. And then since the last 19 days, in April alone, it's increased 14.9%.
And let's make this clear. You're 14, Richard. That includes everything from gold, silver, petroleum.
Palladium,
you put it all together.
So forth. Mm-hmm. But if you're getting in 19 days, let's call it 3 weeks, a 14.9% rate of growth, you can then figure out whether it would be over 17 times that, which would bring you to the full year. So this is a process, and I want to just mention that anything that's done to cut this off, which is the traditional method of raising interest rates, that's what central bankers do, sort of a knee-jerk response, will absolutely raise the interest rates, which have already been rising for the housing market, even faster, since you have a general interest rate and mortgage rates are pegged to that general. There are a couple of underlining floor interest rates. And if that is raised another percent to percent and a half, even if it weren't, but if it is, that brings down this whole housing bubble, which is a $15 trillion bubble in terms of pieces of paper that exist.
You throw in here how much, Richard, that when you say bubble, underscore how much of the U.S., say, banking assets or banking activity depends on home mortgages, nothing else.
Sure, absolutely. But back in 95, the total value of all real estate, assessed value in the country, home real estate, we're not even talking about the commercial, which is another big thing, was $8 trillion. And that jumped to $11.4 trillion in 2000. By 2005, it was $19.8 trillion. That's greater than the stock market. It's greater than most anything that you have. So the real estate sector was growing at that rate. Mortgages jumped from $3.3 trillion to $4.8 trillion in 2000, and now they're $8.7 trillion. So you get the rates of growth of this thing. This is gigantic. But here's where this thing becomes real problematic, because as Lonnie situated, Loudoun County is sort of a leading feature, the leading arm, if you want, the vanguard of what's represents what's happening in the rest of the country, California, Florida, and so forth. But on top of that, on top of this $8.7 trillion in mortgages, you have something called Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which were originally set up, basically, Fannie Mae was set up by Roosevelt in 1937, to provide liquidity to banks so that they could borrow money. If they lent the mortgage out, they could get money from the federal government, replenish the mortgage they lent out, and lend again. But they've been transformed, especially since the S&L crisis of the 1980s, into instruments to feed and grow the bubble, working with Alan Greenspan and now Bernanke. They have little to do with their original function. They are simply instruments to pump money into the bubble. And the danger we have is that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have over $3 trillion of debt of their own. They issue bonds to raise funds. They have also gone into derivatives. They repackage mortgage called asset-based securities, which Lonnie referred to earlier. And they also each have $1 trillion in derivatives, straight-out derivatives of their own. So they have between asset-backed securities and straight-out derivatives another $3.5 to $4 trillion. If you add it all together, $3.5 to $4 trillion in asset-based securities and derivatives, $3 trillion in their own debt, and an $8.7 trillion mortgage bubble, you've got $16 trillion, $15 to $16 trillion. That's the danger, because as this punctures, it punctures that as well. Now, there's two other features I just want to highlight. One is what Marcia referred to. The commercial banks are by no means the biggest lenders to the mortgage bubble. They lend about a third of that $8.6 trillion. But right now, the mortgage loans that they have is 42% of their entire assets. And if you count the paper that they've bought and hold of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which I just described, that's another 14%. So they're up to 56.4%. So if you have half of your assets in real estate directly, then when this bubble punctures, this will simply fry their balance sheet to a crisp. Now, the last element, and why this is so significant in just another way, is that on top of the real estate as real estate, which is completely insane, you also have the fact that about 37, 38% of all new consumer spending since 2002 was money that people borrowed against their home. It's called cash-out refinancing. They took a new mortgage, paid off their old mortgage, which was a lower level. Their home went up to $400,000. They paid off a $250,000 mortgage. They had $150,000 left. They paid off some bills, and then they spent it. And 37% of all new spending in the entire economy, more than the growth of wages, more than credit cards, was the housing bubble. It came straight from that. So if this busts, it also knocks out the consumer spending at the same time. So putting this all together, counter this rise in the commodities bubble, if the bankers, who are very stupid people, I mean, they don't, it's sort of like putting chimpanzee and putting a stick in front of them. There's a few things they can do. If they raise the interest rates, then this will take this entire bubble down with it. And we're seeing signs that this is already in the process of happening.
That's for sure. And let me just make our halftime announcements here, and then we'll continue on this, because also we have one email from James. And we want to discuss also with our guests the principle involved in what Mr. LaRouche says can be done. So let me just say, this is the LaRouche Show. It's weekly, every Saturday, Eastern Time, from 3 to 4 p.m. in the afternoon. And as some of you know who are on the Internet, it's www.larouchepub.com, LaRouchePub.com. And we welcome those who are listening by telephone. And we recommend highly, call in if you don't already have it, or get it off the Internet, or subscribe. I urge you to subscribe to either the weekly magazine or to EIR Online. Call this toll-free number, especially to get these issues on what Lonnie Wolf and Richard Freeman are talking about, the great Leesburg bust of 2006. 1-888-347-3258. That's 1-888-347-3258. And I have two particular things to say, to headline for you. Mr. LaRouche himself is going to be on international internet, based here in Washington, D.C., this coming
Thursday.
And that's the date, the 27th of April, and it's 1 p.m. Eastern Time. That's Mr. LaRouche on, you can look at the website I just gave you, or look at his LaRouche Pack website, www.larouchepack.com, LaRouchePac.com, 1 p.m., April 27th. International webcast by Mr. LaRouche, and you may well see, for all I know, some economic animations of the kind of insane, historic, epic boom bust that's being described about Loudoun County in Northern Virginia at this time in history. It's unbelievable, and I here live in it, and I can't believe it. And now, one more thing, though, to let people know. The opposite of the kind of thinking that went into this, that's behind fostering and furthering this bubble, and then that's waiting in the wings to take advantage of the bust in the form of fascist economics. We can get into that or not, but how do you think about an economy is what we have to have citizens know and what Congress must know. And one big aid to that is a new DVD that's being released by the LaRouche Political Action Committee. And it's on retooling the economy, the auto sector in particular, for world economic revival. It's about 65 minutes long. You can check on getting it at the LaRouche PAC website. There are thousands of them being produced, and you need to know, have it, you need to circulate it, and you need to get it and contribute, because you are contributing to kind of what Mr. LaRouche has called the greatest ass-kicking effort in history by the LaRouche Youth Movement. And so to resume the discussion, let's turn to Washington, D.C., to Paul Marino, because can you tell us what you think is important to know about what you're trying to do to change the degree of understanding or to end the denial in Washington?
Yeah, thanks, Marcia. What we've been doing principally since about 8 months or so ago is what I call the cognitive sieging of Washington, D.C. The essentials that have been brought out today by Mr. Wolf and Mr. Freeman are week to week being circulated in our intelligence EIR. And what we've done is every week been mass distributing between 2,000 and 5,000 of these periodicals in Washington, D.C., in and around the institutions of the federal government and those institutions that are around the federal government. That way, as the crisis hits and gets infinitely worse, at their fingertips, the people who are going to be making a decision, either for Hitler or FDR, have at their fingertips the choice to adopt what's called the American system of political economy. In organizing the last couple weeks in particular, there's been a increased political activity with our work on Capitol Hill. And, you know, these things vary from week to week and crisis to crisis. And you definitely know there's a crisis coming on when you have aides running back to you and asking for directions or specifics on what's going on with the financial bubble here. Because, by and large, a lot of them just simply don't know. And many of them just repeat after me the lines that are put out in the mass media. So they don't really have an understanding of how Greenspan has orchestrated this bubble over the last 10 years. Some of them also are younger, so they just don't. They grew up in and not knowing what it is. In Congress, my specific responsibility, what we've done recently is broken up the country into regions. That way, we can facilitate more of our work. And my primary responsibility is in the ranch region, which is Texas and everything north. And most of these states are Republican states. They did vote for Bush in the last election, and a lot of these congressmen and senators are some of the big problems because they've gone along with free trade and that in general the last 20 or so years. What I found in the last 2 weeks is that many of these offices are beginning to get back to us, either just because they need someone to talk to, or just simply they have no idea. Like half of them, I would say, just have no idea about economics in general. And so it's very easy to at least introduce them to economics of the American system from the get-go. And the other guys, both Democrats and Republicans who are from these areas, can be somewhat savvy in talking about finance and so forth. And so we've had a lot of fun in holding them to the fire on the question of Felix or Hatton, if they're a Democrat, or the personality of George Shultz, if they're a Republican. Many of these people go to them for advice on economic matters. And these particular people are our main enemies right now, particularly particularly Earl Hatton. He is someone who is trying to present himself as the FDR. And I've had a lot of fun in pointing out that this man is, in fact, a wolf in sheep's clothing. And when you begin to ask him, as we had recently at some of these different public events that they have here in Washington, about FDR, about the precedent to build up out of this economic crisis, he basically lets it all hang out. He says, no, FDR is outdated, and we have private means to rebuild the nation's economy. When you show that discussion to congressmen and their aides, they can see very clearly then what you're talking about. And then when you go further to point out that this man wants to privatize the U.S. military, it then becomes blatantly obvious. And they have a much harder time in taking his campaign contributions. So reality is very helpful for pedagogical purposes in pointing out what it is that Congress needs to do in the near term ahead of us. What we're looking forward to now is we have coming up what's called a week of action. We have these every month or so to try to create a shock front in Washington to shake these people loose from all their bad habits so that they can go ahead and do what's necessary. So we're bringing in all of our organizers from the East Coast, from the Midwest, their contacts, and also a number of VIPs, people from the labor movement, people in state legislators who we'll be working with more closely over the recent period, to put together the combinations that can push through the necessary economic legislation. And as you mentioned earlier, this is going to be broadcast over the Internet on Thursday with Mr. LaRouche. The young people that are coming in are going to be participating in helping to mass distribute the material throughout Washington, D.C., and increase the rate of discussion of principles here in the nation's capital, which is wonderful. There's always you always tend to find when you're able to do that, you shake things loose and you push people over the edge to do something great because of the impact of what you're doing has. This will be starting this Sunday, so get ready.
Yeah, thank you very much. And before, I have emails for our studio guests, and we have some other concepts to go over. But to continue on this just with Matt up there in New England, you're probably packing up now, Matt, but to come down and join this effort. But do you want to throw in there any aspect of what you've been involved in, again, exposing this Felix Rohatyn menace?
Yeah, well, we're in Boston, which is the center of what they call the Vault, and I'm sure Lonnie knows a lot about this. I've talked to him about it before. But the Vault is the historic Boston center of the financiers, who are always what FDR called the economic Tories of the United States. But we've been having a lot of fun out here in Boston and in surrounding areas, where there is a big machine that Felix Rohatyn thinks that he controls. So we've been distributing some of this literature that Paul was talking about down here at South Station, which is the train station which all of these bankers use in the middle of the financial district. We've been asking them if they wanted to help us lock Felix Rohatyn in the vault. And we also have we've also gotten to go up to Middlebury College, which is where Felix Rohatyn has his Institute for International Policy Studies up in Vermont. We confronted the woman who was the head of the Middlebury College Rohatyn Center, confronted her on why she was working with Rohatyn, who, together with George Shultz a year ago, were proposing to privatize the U.S. military in the image of the British East India Company's mercenary armies. So a little bit of a freak out coming from the Rohatyn Center, I think, has provoked a response from the Boston Globe, which tried to publish some sort of slander against the LaRouche Youth Movement here last Friday, in conjunction with a lot of media outlets all around the world, including in Switzerland and in Germany and in France. But we got to counterpunch with that pretty well. And the outreach that we're doing in the lower 80% has got the Democratic Party sort of unstable. The machine apparatus inside the Democratic Party is becoming destabilized by our outreach into students in the lower 80%. We did get to see John Kerry this morning. He was here speaking about withdrawing troops from Iraq by the end of the year. So we saturated the whole crowd at Faneuil Hall here in Boston with the new private armies, George Shultz and Felix Rohatyn's Halliburton's War pamphlet that we put out. And right now we have a big crew out at Harvard Square organizing all of the Bostonians. We're getting ready to bring a lot of people down into Washington for the Week of Action.
Oh, that's great. Well, let me go right, Paul and Matt, you can add any questions or comments in a minute. But for Lonnie and Richard here in the studio, I want to say, first thing, let me go to Lonnie and mention that James from California has sent in an email, and this concerns the bus side, saying, aren't inflated housing prices a major source of revenue? Now what's going to happen? Meaning for government functions. By the way, Timothy from California, I think Paul just answered your question about what kind of response we are getting on the Hill. You see, it's something that we're making happen. But what do you say, Lonnie?
Well, the bubble that was created was sold to the American people, the bubble in the housing, because it was something people needed. If they didn't need it, they wouldn't have been so readily suckered on this thing. But people needed the money. Their credit cards started coming due. They had to find a way to pay the credit cards. How'd you do that? You refinanced your home at lower interest, and you could build up your credit cards again. People have been living in this delusion that they've been doing well. And what happens is, as soon as something starts to change the perception that maybe this isn't going to last, then you start, the underlying dynamic becomes panic. And right now, the bubble is coming down because of this. And there is really nothing that the bankers can do to stop it. Because the level of borrowing by the individual homeowner against their property and the level requires a continued massive appreciation of that property. It doesn't even require that a decline for people to get worried. All it has to do is slow down, because people's lives are now geared to the fact that they are either going to be able to borrow more money or not. And that goes for people in areas where their homes are not even appreciating, like in Loudoun County. But it's especially the case here. It's especially the case here in Loudoun County. So the first thing is to understand that this is the mentality of a bubble. Now, one of the things that Richie's going to be writing about in the next issue, which is going to be on the national housing market, so people should look for that article, is the fact that here's an astounding figure. I don't like figures because most of them lie, but this tells the truth. 1 in 10 of every one out of every 10 mortgage holder is what's called upside down. That means that they have more debt on their home than what they could possibly sell it for. 1 in 20 is upside down by more than 10%. This is an enormous number of people. I don't know what the number is, but it's enormous. And we're talking about these people being fundamentally bankrupt, and the only thing that can save them is the hope that their home is somehow going to appreciate. Now, what's happened in Loudoun County and what's bringing this bubble down is, starting in approximately the end of October, beginning November, people started getting nervous because they started seeing the debt against their home rising, and they started sensing that there was something going on in the economy with the rises in gasoline prices, with the uncertain job market in a number of areas, including even here, with the insanity in Washington and the government not being able to rely on any kind of stable policy, with escalating health care costs and so forth and so on. These people started getting nervous, and they started sensing that they maybe were not the homes were not going to appreciate fast enough for them to realize the kinds of profits. So what started happening is people started dumping homes onto the market, trying to cash out, to get out while they still could, hoping, because here most people are not upside down because there has been this enormous appreciation. So they started worrying about this. And as the months went on, through all the way up through March, this became a virtual stampede. The number of houses in inventory at this point, the trends are what's important, not the absolute numbers, but the trend can be seen by the fact that there are approximately 250% more homes in inventory.
Meaning unsold properties for sale,
listings, than there were a year ago at the same time. At the same time, previously you used to have people, and we'll tell you this, they used to have, it was insane. You put a house on the market, there'd be four or five people trying to fight with each other over the house, and it would sell within a period of 2 weeks. That was a year ago. 2 weeks was the average length that something was on sale. This is a white-hot market. All right, well, what happened now is at the end, the numbers for April are going to show that it's over 90 days. That's an enormous escalation, meaning the market is backing up. At the same time, all these developers who bought all this expensive land and borrowed all this money to develop homes, there were some 45 to 50,000 homes at the end of 2005 that were in the so-called pipeline, ready to be built. Well, these people can't stop building, because if they stop building, those properties, the creditors on their properties start calling in their notes. So they are continuing to build at a rate of almost 8,000 new homes a year in this county. So the new homes are colliding with the panicky people who are dumping the old homes, and the net effect is gridlock, and the gridlock means collapse.
So that's why I'm just underscoring for Jim James from California, who said, what about government functions if inflated housing prices were part of the revenue? That's why people, I think, need to pay attention now to what Mr. LaRouche is saying about needing the equivalent of a receivership process where you don't have government functions shut down. You don't have counties or cities shut down like Pittsburgh or Detroit or any county under crisis.
That's 80% of Loudoun County's revenue, the county government's revenue, which funds the schools, the police, and so forth, come from real estate.
Right, and I'm sure that's what Mr. LaRouche has been addressing, and he will do so again here on April 27th at 1 o'clock on the website. So,
Marcia, if I could just say one thing to that.
I want to turn to Richard, and also, Jim, we got your email, and Richard may address it now or not, and Jim was pointing out that you've had misuse in the past of government agencies at time of crisis, like he's saying Hoover misused the Reconstruction Finance Corporation. That's what you're maybe saying about Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and that's certainly what Mr. Rohatyn stands for. But if you can include that in your comment.
Sure, sure. I mean, I think there's two things to consider. I think what Lonnie said is absolutely valid, that there was a use of the home simply to survive and pay off previous bills that had been built up, medical bills and credit card. But I think since around 2001, and there's still people doing that today, but since around 2001, I think this is where you really get the baby boomer element. People became enamored with this. They became obsessive. I don't have to do any work. I just sit back, and my home goes up $50,000 to $100,000 a year. And in fact, I can buy a second home. In fact, I can borrow against my first home to buy a second home and watch it do that. And it's that proliferation that is very crucial. Right now, 40% of all homes that are built, bought last year, were not primary residences. You weren't going to live there as your primary residence.
This is in the country.
And across the country. Uh-huh. About a third of those were people who had two places to live and so forth. But two-thirds of that 40%, or more than a quarter of all the homes in the country, are simply second homes for investment purposes. And this became a mania, and it is a mania. And so, therefore, what's happening, and part of what Lonnie is pointing out, but, I mean, this is one of the key things, is not only people are saying, I got to cash out for the highest value of my home, is, goodness gracious, I've got 2, 3, 5 homes. I better sell them because I can't sell them anymore. When people dump these homes, we've never had a quarter of all homes bought for investment purposes. When they try and get out at the same time, that's going to just simply intensify this. And one humorous note, there was a poll that was done, I think USA Today or someone, that said, well, 7 out of 10 people believe, either with certainty or great likelihood, that there will be a housing market crash. That's pretty good. But then 60-something percent of these people said, but it won't happen in my locality. And this is typical baby boomer. It won't happen to my home. No one will let my mortgage default. It'll happen to them. And it's this delusion. I'm sure Paul's also meeting in Congress, both on the housing question and other words, other things, where people will be rational, but say, but it can't happen to me. I mean, the gods wouldn't allow that to happen to me. So I think that's part of the psychology which we're dealing with. And that's being punctured, and that's going to be very healthy as it's punctured. On the Reconstruction Finance Corporation, I'll just say very briefly, yeah, the Fannie Mae's purpose and Freddie Mac did get perverted. I'm not saying they were the spectacular agencies, but they had a real function. And Roosevelt understood with Fannie Mae what he wanted to do. With the Reconstruction Finance Corporation, it was set up as a limited thing, but it did have a lot of power on the books, but it was used by Hoover basically to bail out the banks and to bail out the bonds of railroads, which were held by the banks. It was a strategy which was doomed to failure, and as people can see, it did fail. What Roosevelt did, and I think it's really important whenever talking about the Reconstruction Finance Corporation, there's different personalities attached, but it's Roosevelt who ran the thing, and it was his policy and his intention, and he used it as an instrument for rebuilding the country for what LaRouche calls long-term capital credit. It was done by Eisenhower with the Highway Act. It was done by Roosevelt and the Reconstruction Finance Corporation, where between 1933 and 45, it pumped $32 billion into the economy. It was the largest lending institution in the world to build the World War II economic rebuilding of new higher technology and the infrastructure of the New Deal. So I'm not saying we would rescue a Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, but I do think the principle of putting this, as Marcia mentioned, through a bankruptcy reorganization and getting credit into long-term fundamental features, just bring the housing bubble to an end, bring the commodity bubble to an end, start getting credit where it has to go, and people have to think that 50% of the investment has to go into infrastructure and things like that.
Lonnie?
I just want to say, I mean, it is the thing that you're going to have to, especially in the Congress, it's going to be hard for some people to take. We cannot save the mortgages. There is no possibility of saving mortgage value in the United States or anywhere else for that matter. It's finished. People are going to have to accept that the, quote, value of their homes is not determined by some desire, as Richie's pointing out, to become rich. People can live in homes. Lynn wants to make sure that people will be able to stay in their homes, even some of these people that may be in homes that are too big for them, for the time being at least. But the idea is to avoid, and like the plague, anybody that talks about protecting the value of mortgages and that, or doing something to rescue the value of mortgages. These mortgages are ridiculous, absurd, any adjective you want to use, and they have to be written down. And in a sense, what needs to be thought about is that we never again must allow the kinds of unregular, because the one thing we didn't talk about is that none of this could have happened had there been proper regulation in the mortgage industry. I mean, look at all these silly kinds of things, mortgage instruments that are loaned. Look at the fact that people were encouraged to buy homes who had no jobs, no anything. They were just given mortgages. And in some cases, as Richie pointed out in one of our meetings this week, the mortgages had built-in things. People were borrowing money to pay the mortgage. In other words, they were borrowing an additional money that they were paying for, and that money was earmarked to pay the mortgage. These kinds of practices have to be completely outlawed, and these are the practices of the speculative bubble that were encouraged by Greenspan, and we have to go back to some kind of regulated system in which, yes, we protect people's ability to live in homes, but no, we don't protect the right of bankers to make obscene profits off people's greed.
Thank you. And in the remaining minutes, we have only about four. I'd like to turn again to Washington, D.C., and also to Matt up in Boston, who's going to be going to Washington, D.C. with a delegation from New England for this week of action, because Mr. LaRouche, in speaking to the LaRouche Youth Movement Western States Weekend Retreat Cadre School, said, he summarized the situation. He said, look, the times we're in is like the day the buzzard flew over the chicken yard. There is flapping, there is danger,
squawking. There
is squawking, there is freakouts. So, Paul, you're there seeing this. Do you want to add what your intention is or what the...
Well, sure, Marcia. Go ahead. There is what I perceive to be a huge bubble in knowledge and understanding of the history of this, and then also what really works. Now that Greenspan has been replaced by Bernanke, but I guess many of these people in Congress just simply don't know what they're playing. It's kind of like going to a bad concert where the singer hasn't had the time to train their voice, so they're all out of tune and, you know, belting and belching and so on. So we, with the LaRouche Youth Movement, have the responsibility to properly train them, tune them, so that they can approach these things and know how to develop an economy that's not based on gambling or any kind of bubble or bubblenomics. So with the Week of Action we have planned, with the literature distribution, with the parades we have, it's going to be a whole lot of fun. So if people who are listening would like to come, you're welcome to come down here for the Week of Activities and participate in any way possible. Or if you can't get here in person, of course, pay attention to the webcast Thursday. That way you'll get a clear idea of the discussion going on between Mr. LaRouche and the leadership of the nation, and see how they're approaching it, where they're missing the beat, and where we have to intervene after the fact to continue this education process.
Right. And again, you can call to get this information and also to subscribe to support it. It's 1-888-347-3258. 1-888-347-3258. But back to Boston again, Matt Ogden, and your whole special knowledge of the bubble psychology in Loudoun County. But do you find in Boston or on these occasions that there is tremendous receptivity to potentially get out of the bubblenomics thinking?
Well, the way that we've been able to conceptually present this, we've done a lot of classes conceptually, is by addressing the mass insanity of the bubble mentality from the standpoint of comparing it to the Hans Christian Andersen story, The Emperor's New Clothes.
Okay.
And what you have when you have just the bubble is mass insanity. That's what the bubble is. And then finally, you have a voice of reason in the Emperor's New Clothes. It's the little boy. And but we've been able to compare it to some of the work that we've done on Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, where in that play, the insanity of the society was, you had one voice of reason from Cicero. But when you put those two examples together and you look at how the population responded to the voice of reason from that little boy that said, but the emperor's naked, and then you look at how the population responded to the voice of reason of Cicero by doing nothing at all, not changing at all, I think the question that we've addressed people, especially young people, which is Boston is a very young city, is the question is, how is society going to respond to that voice of reason? And we've had a lot of fun recruiting our generation to say, this is the end of the era in which the youth generation participates in the baby boomers system. Now, we're not going to kick the baby boomers out of the country, but now we're going to dominate the way that people think about the world. And we're going to invite the baby boomers who are running the country when we go down to Washington next week to have them begin to participate in our system and the way that we think about the world.
Well, thank you. That exactly ends the hour that we have this week, April 22nd, 2006, The LaRouche Show. I invite you to listen and see how things are going next week. And in the meantime, April 27th, 1 p.m. Eastern Time,
Thursday
at 1 p.m. on www.larouchepack.com. You will see and hear Mr. LaRouche in person. And do contribute and subscribe. And I thank Paul Marino, Matthew Ogden, Lonnie Wolf, Richard Freeman, all my colleagues and friends for this show today. This is Marcia Mary Baker. Thank you very much for The LaRouche Show.